They scurried toward the doors, eager to be away. Sitters or no, not one would have set foot this high in the tower without Elida's direct summons. Fingering her striped stole, Elida let her smile become one of pleasure. Yes, she was the mistress in the White Tower, as was only proper for the Ammerlin seat. Before that fast-stepping knot of sitters reached the doorway, the left-hand door opened, and Alviarin stepped in, the narrow white stole of the keeper almost vanishing against a silk dress that made Velina's seem dingy. Elida felt her smile go crooked and begin sliding from her face. Alviarin had a single sheet of parchment in one slim hand. Odd, what one noticed at a time like this. The woman had been gone almost 2 weeks, vanished from the tower without word or note, without anyone so much as seeing her go, and Elida had begun to think fond thoughts of Alviarin lying in a snowbank or swept away in a river, sliding beneath the ice. The six sitters skidded to a halt uncertainly when Alviarin did not move out of their way. Even a keeper with Alviarin's influence did not impede sitters. Though Velina, normally the most self-possessed woman in the tower, flinched for some reason. Alviarin glanced once at Elida, coolly, studied the sitters for a moment, and understood everything. "I think you should leave that with me," she said to Sidora, in tones only a fraction warmer than the snow outside. "The mother likes to consider her decrees carefully, as you know. This would not be the first time she changed her mind after signing." She held out a slim hand. Sidora, whose arrogance was notable even among yellows, barely hesitated before giving her the leather folder. Elida ground her teeth in fury. Sidora had hated her 5 days up to her elbows in hot water and scrub boards. Elida would find something less comfortable for her next time. Maybe Sylviana, after all. Maybe cleaning the cesspits. Alviarin stepped aside without a word, and the sitters went, adjusting shawls, muttering to themselves, reassuming the dignity of the hall. Briskly, Alviarin closed the door behind them and walked toward Elida, thumbing through the papers in the folder. The decrees she had signed, hoping Alviarin was dead. Of course, she had not rested on hope. She had not spoken to Ciane in case someone might see and tell Alviarin when she returned, but Ciane was certainly working away as instructed, following the path of treason that surely would lead to Alviarin Friedan. But Elida had hoped. Oh, how she had hoped! Alviarin murmured to herself as she rifled the folder. "This can go through, I suppose, but not this, or this, and certainly not this." She crumpled a decree, signed and sealed by the Ammerlin seat, and tossed it to the floor contemptuously. Stopping beside Elida's gilded chair with the flame of Tarvalin in moonstones atop its high back, she slapped the folder and her own parchment down on the table, and then slapped Elida's face so hard she saw black flecks. "I thought we had settled this, Elida." The monstrous woman's voice made the snowstorm outside seem warm. "I know how to save the tower from your blunders, and I won't have you making new ones behind my back. If you persist, be assured that I will see you deposed, stilled, and howling under the birch before every initiate and even the servants." With an effort, Elida kept her hand away from her cheek. She did not need a mirror to tell her it was red. She had to be careful. Ciane had found nothing yet, or she would have come. Alviarin could open her mouth before the hall and reveal the whole disastrous kidnapping of the Althor boy. She might see her deposed and stilled and birched with that alone, but Alviarin had another string to her bow. Tovain Ghazal was leading 50 sisters and 200 of the tower guard against a black tower Elida had been sure, when she gave the orders, held perhaps 2 or 3 men who could channel. Yet even with the hundreds, with Alviarin staring coldly down at her, that thought still curdled Elida's stomach. Even with hundreds of these Ashaman, she had hope for Tovain. The Black Tower would be rent in fire and blood, she had foretold, and sisters would walk its grounds. Surely that meant that somehow Tovain would triumph. More, the rest of the foretelling had told her that the tower would regain all its old glories under her, that Althor himself would quail at her anger. Alviarin had heard the words coming out of Elida's mouth when the foretelling took her, And she had not remembered later when she began her blackmail, had not understood her own doom. Elida waited in patience. She would repay the woman threefold, but she could be patient. For now. Making no attempt to hide her sneer, Alviarin pushed the folder aside and moved the single parchment in front of Elida. She flipped open the green and gold writing case, dipped Elida's pen in the inkwell, and thrust it at her. Sign. Elida took the pen, wondering what madness she would be putting her name to this time. Yet another increase in the Tower Guard, when the rebels would be done before there was any use for soldiers? Another attempt to make the Ajahs reveal publicly which sisters headed them? That had certainly fallen on its nose. Reading quickly, she felt a knot of ice grow in her belly and keep growing. Giving each Ajah final authority over any sister in its quarter, no matter her own Ajah, had been the worst insanity so far. How could picking apart the very fabric of the tower save it? But this... The world now knows that Randall Thor is the Dragon Reborn. The world knows that he is a man who can touch the One Power. Such men have lain within the authority of the White Tower since time immemorial. The Dragon Reborn is granted the protection of the Tower, but whosoever attempts to approach him, save through the White Tower, lies attainted of treason against the Light, and anathema is pronounced against them now and forever. The world may rest easily, knowing that the White Tower will safely guide the Dragon Reborn to the last battle and the inevitable triumph. Automatically, numbly, she added, "of the light," after triumph, but then her hand froze. Publicly acknowledging Althor as the Dragon Reborn could be born, since he was, and this might lead many to accept the rumors that he had knelt to her already, which would prove useful. But the rest, she could not believe so much damage could be contained in so few words. "The light have mercy," she breathed fervently. "If this is proclaimed, it will be impossible to convince Althor that his abduction was unsanctioned." It would be hard enough without, but she had seen people convinced before that what had happened had not, and them in the middle of it happening. And he will be 10 times on his guard against another attempt. Alviarin, at best this will frighten away a few of his followers. At best. Many likely had waded so deep with him they did not dare try to wade back. Certainly not if they thought anathema already hung over their heads. "I might as well set fire to the tower with my own hand as sign this." Alviarin sighed impatiently. "You haven't forgotten your catechism, have you? Say it for me as I taught you." Elida's lips compressed of their own accord. One pleasure in the woman's absence, not the greatest but a very real pleasure, had been not being forced to repeat that vile litany every day. "I will do as I am told," she said at last in a flat voice. She was the Ammerlin's seat. "I will speak the words you tell me to speak, and no more." Her foretelling ordained her triumph, but oh, light, let it come soon. "I will sign what you tell me to sign, and nothing else. I am," she choked over the last, "I am obedient to your will." "You sound as if you need to be reminded of the truth of that," Alviarin said with another sigh. "I suppose I've left you alone too long." She tapped the parchment with a peremptory finger. "Sign." Elida signed, dragging the pen across the parchment. There was nothing else she could do. Alviarin barely waited for the pen's nib to lift before snatching up the decree. "I will seal this myself," she said, heading for the door. "I shouldn't have left the Ammerlin's seal where you could find it. I want to talk to you later. I have left you to yourself too long. Be here when I return." "Later," Elida said. "When? Alviarin? Alviarin?" The door closed behind the woman, leaving Elida to fume. Be there when Alviarin returned. Confined to her quarters like a novice in the punishment cells. For a time she fingered her correspondence box, with its golden hawks fighting among white clouds in a blue sky, yet she could not make herself open it. With Alviarin gone, that box had begun once more to hold letters and reports of importance, not just the table scraps Alviarin let fall to her. Yet with the woman's return it might as well have been empty. Rising, she began rearranging the roses in their white vases, each atop a white marble plinth in a corner of the room. Blue roses, the most rare. Abruptly, she realized that she was staring at a broken rose stem in her hands, snapped in two. Half a dozen more littered the floor tiles. She made a vexed sound in her throat. She'd been thinking of her hands around Alviarin's throat. It was not the first time she had considered killing the woman, but Alviarin would have taken precautions. Sealed documents to be opened should anything untoward happen had no doubt been left with the last sisters Elida would suspect. That had been her one real worry during Alviarin's absence, that someone else might think the woman dead and come forward with the evidence that would drag the stole from her shoulders. Sooner or later, though, one way or another, Alviarin was finished, as surely as those roses were. "You didn't answer my knock, Mother, so I came on in," a woman said gruffly behind her. Elida turned, ready to flay with her tongue, but at the sight of the stocky, square-faced woman in a red-fringed shawl standing just inside the room, the blood drained from her own cheeks. "The keeper said you wanted to speak with me," Sylviana said irritably. "About a private penance." Even to the Ammerlin's seat she made no effort to hide her disgust. Sylviana believed private penance a ridiculous affectation. Penance was public, only punishment took place in private. "She also asked me to remind you of something, but she rushed off before saying what," she finished with a snort. Sylviana saw anything that took time away from her novices and accepted as needless interruption.
"I think I remember," Elida told her dully.
When Sylviana finally left, after only half an hour by the chimes of Semila's clock, yet an endless eternity, all that kept Elida from calling the hall to sit immediately so she could demand Alviarin be stripped of the keeper's stole was the certainty of her foretelling and the certainty that Ciane would trace that trail of treason back to Alviarin. That, and the sure fact that whether or not Alviarin fell in the confrontation, she herself definitely would. So Elida do Avrinia Royhan, Watcher of the Seals, the Flame of Tarvalin, the Ammerlin Seat, surely the most powerful ruler in the world, lay face down on her bed and blubbered into her pillows, too tender to don the shift that lay discarded on the floor, certain that when Alviarin returned, the woman would insist on her sitting through the entire interview. She blubbered, and through her tears she prayed for Alviarin's downfall to come soon. "I did not tell you to have Elida beaten," that voice of crystal chimes said. "Do you rise above yourself?" Alviarin flung herself from her knees onto her belly before the woman who seemed made of dark shadows and silvery light. Seizing the hem of Messana's dress, she rained kisses on it. The weave of illusion, it must be that, though she could not see a single thread of Sidar any more than she could sense the ability to channel in the woman who stood over her, did not hold completely, with her frantically shifting the skirt's edge. Flickers of bronze silk with a thin border of intricately embroidered black scrollwork showed through.
"I live to serve and obey you, great mistress," Alviarin panted between kisses. "I know that I am among the lowest of the low, a worm in your presence, and I pray only for your smile."
She'd been punished once for rising above herself, not for disobedience, thanks be to the great Lord of the Dark, and she knew that whatever howls Elida might be raising right then, they could not be half so loud as her own had been. Messana let the kissing go on for some time, and finally signaled an end by tipping Alviarin's face up with the toe of a slipper beneath the chin. "The decree has gone out?" It was not a question, but Alviarin answered hastily.
"Yes, great mistress. Copies went to North Harbor and South Harbor even before I had Elida sign. The first couriers have gone, and no merchant will leave the city without copies to distribute."
Messana knew all that, of course. She knew everything. A cramp tightened the back of Alviarin's awkwardly craned neck, but she did not move. Messana would tell her when to move.
"Great mistress, Elida is an empty husk. With all humility, would it not be better without the need to use her?"
She held her breath. Questions could be dangerous with the Chosen. A shadow-nailed silvery finger tapped silver lips, pursed in an amused smile.
"Better if you wore the Ammerlin stole, child," Messana said at last. "An ambition small enough to fit you, but all in its time. For now I have a tiny task for you. In spite of all the walls that have gone up between the Ajahs, the heads of the Ajahs seem to encounter one another with surprising frequency. By chance, they make it seem. All but the red, at least. A pity Galena got herself killed, or she could tell you what they are about. Very probably it is trivial, but you will learn why they bear teeth at one another in public, then whisper together in private."
"I hear and obey, great mistress," Alviarin replied promptly, grateful that Messana considered it unimportant. The great secret of who headed the Ajahs was none to her. Every black sister was required to relay to the Supreme Council every whisper inside her supposed Ajah, but only Galena among them had been black. That meant querying the black sisters among the sitters, which meant going through all the layers between them and her. That would take time, and without any certainty of success. Except for Ferain Neheran and Suana Dragand, who were the heads of their Ajahs, sitters rarely seemed to know what their Ajah's head was thinking until they were told.
"I will tell you as soon as I learn, great mistress."
But she did file away a tidbit for herself. Trivial matter or not, Messana did not know everything that happened in the White Tower. And Alviarin would keep her eyes open for a sister in bronze skirts bordered on the hem in black scrollwork. Messana was hiding herself in the tower, and knowledge was power. Chapter 26. The Extra Bit. Ciane strode the hallways of the tower with a growing sense of being confounded at every turn. The White Tower was quite large, true, but she had been at this for hours. She very much wanted to be snug in her own rooms. Despite casements in place in every window, drafts drifted along the broad tapestry-hung corridors and made the stand lamps flicker. Cold drafts, and difficult to ignore when they slipped under her skirts. Her rooms were warm and comfortable and safe. Maids bobbed curtsies and manservants bowed in her wake, half seen and completely ignored. Most sisters were in their own Ajah's quarters, and those few out and about moved with wary pride, often in pairs, always of the same Ajah, shawls spread along their arms and displayed like banners. She smiled and nodded pleasantly to Talin, but the statuesque, golden-haired sitter returned a hard stare, beauty carved from ice, then stalked away, twitching her green-fringed shawl. Too late now to approach Talin about being part of the search, even had Pevara been agreeable. Pevara counseled caution, then more caution, and truth to tell, Ciane was more than willing to listen under the circumstances. It was just that Talin was a friend. Had been a friend. Talin was not the worst. Several ordinary sisters sniffed at her openly. At a sitter. None white, of course, but that should have made no difference. No matter what was going on in the tower, proprieties should be observed. Jewelaine Madoma, a tall, attractive woman with short-cut black hair who had held a chair for the Brown less than a year, brushed past her without so much as a murmur of apology, and went off with those mannish strides of hers. Saren Asnobar, another Brown sitter, gave Ciane a fierce scowl and fingered that curved knife she always carried behind her belt before disappearing down a side corridor. Saren was Altaran, slight touches of white at her dark temples emphasizing a thin, age-faded white scar across one olive cheek, and only a warder could match her for scowling. Perhaps these things were all to be expected. There had been several unfortunate incidents recently, and no sister would forget being bundled unceremoniously from the hallways around another Ajah's quarters, much less what had sometimes gone with it. Rumors said a sitter had had more than her dignity ruffled by the Reds, though not who. A great pity the hall could not obstruct Elida's mad decree, but first one Ajah, then another, had leaped on the new prerogatives. Few sitters were willing to think of giving them up, now they were in place, and the result was a tower divided very nearly into armed camps. Once Ciane had thought the air in the tower felt like a quivering hot jelly of suspicion and backbiting.
Now it was quivering hot jelly with an acid bite. Clicking her tongue in vexation, she adjusted her own white-fringed shawl as Saren vanished. It was illogical to flinch because an Altaran scowled. Even Saren would go no further, surely not. And more than illogical to worry over what she could not change when she had a task. And then, after all of her search that morning, she took a single step and saw her long-sought quarry walking toward her. Zara Dakan was a slim, black-haired girl with a prideful air, properly self-possessed, and by all outward evidence untouched by the heated currents flowing through the tower these days. Well, not a girl, precisely, but Cien was sure she had not worn that white-fringed shawl 50 years yet. She was inexperienced. Relatively inexperienced. That might help. Zara made no move to avoid a sitter of her own Aja, bowing her head in respect as Cien fell in beside her. Quite a lot of intricate golden embroidery climbed the sleeves of her snowy dress and made a wide band at the bottom of her skirt. It was an unusual degree of show for the white Aja. "Sitter," she murmured. Did her blue eyes hold a touch of worry? "I need you for something," Cien said more calmly than she felt. Very likely she was transplanting her own feelings into Zara's big eyes. "Come with me." There was nothing to fear, not in the heart of the White Tower, but keeping her hands folded at her waist, unclenched, required surprising effort. As expected, as hoped, Zara went along with only another murmur, this of acquiescence. She glided at Cien's side quite gracefully as they descended broad marble staircases and wide curving ramps, and gave only the slightest frown when Cien opened a door onto the ground floor, onto narrow stairs that spiraled down into darkness. "After you, sister," Cien said, channeling a small ball of light. By protocol she should have preceded the other woman, but she could not bring herself to do that. Zara did not hesitate in going down. Logically, she had nothing to fear from a sitter, a white sitter. Logically, Cien would tell her what she wanted when the time was ripe, and it would be nothing she could not do. Illogically, Cien's stomach fluttered like a huge moth. Light! She held Sidar and the other woman did not. Zara was weaker in any case. There was nothing to fear, which did nothing to quiet those fluttering wings in her middle. Down they climbed, and down, past doors letting on to basements and sub-basements, until they reached the very lowest level, below even where the accepted were tested. The dark hallway was lit only by Cien's small light. They held their skirts high, but their slippers kicked up small clouds of dust however carefully they stepped. Plain wooden doors lined the smooth stone walls, many with great lumps of rust for hinges and locks. "Sitter," Zara asked, finally showing doubt, "whatever can we be after down here? I don't believe anyone has been this deep for years." Cien was sure her own visit a few days earlier had been the first to this level in at least a century. That was one of the reasons she and Pevara had chosen it. "Just in here," she said, swinging open a door that moved with only a little squealing. No amount of oil could loosen all the rust, and efforts to use the power had been useless. Her abilities with earth were better than Pevara's, but that was not saying very much. Zara stepped in and blinked in surprise. In an otherwise empty room, Pevara sat behind a sturdy, if rather worn, table with three small benches around it. Getting those few pieces down unseen had been difficult, especially when servants could not be trusted. Clearing out the dust had been much simpler, if no more pleasant, and smoothing the dust in the hall outside, necessary after every visit, had been simply onerous. "I was about to give up sitting here in the dark," Pevara growled. The glow of Sidar surrounded her as she lifted a lantern from beneath the table and channeled it alight, casting as much illumination as the rough-walled former storeroom deserved. Somewhat plump and normally pretty, the red sitter looked a bear with two sore teeth. "We want to ask you a few questions, Zara." And she shielded the woman as Cien shut the door. Zara's shadowed face remained utterly calm, but she swallowed audibly.
"About what, sitters?"
There was the faintest tremor in the younger woman's voice as well. It could be simply the mood of the tower, though.
The Black Aja,
Pivara replied curtly.
We want to know whether you're a dark friend.
Amazement and outrage shattered Zara's calm. Most would have taken that for sufficient denial without her snapped,
I don't have to take that from you. You Reds have been setting up false dragons for years. If you ask me, there's no need to look further than the Red Quarters to find Black Sisters.
Pevara's face darkened with fury. Her loyalty to her Aja was strong, which went without saying, but worse, she had lost her entire family to dark friends. Siain decided to step in before Pevara resorted to brute force. They had no proof. Not yet.
Sit, Zara, she said, with as much warmth as she could muster. Sit down, sister.
Zara turned toward the door as though she might disobey an order from a sitter and of her own Aja. But at last she settled onto one of the benches, stiffly, sitting right at the edge. Before Siain had finished taking a seat that placed Zara between them, Pevara laid the ivory-white oath-rod on the battered tabletop. Siain sighed. They were sitters with a perfect right to use any Turangreal they wished, but she had been the one to filch it. She could not help thinking of it as filching when she had observed none of the proper procedures. And the whole time in the back of her head, she had been sure she would turn to find long-dead Sorela Bagand standing here, ready to haul her off to the mistress of novices' study by her ear. Irrational, but no less real.
"We want to make sure you tell the truth," Pevara said, still sounding like an angry bear. "So you will swear an oath on this, and then I'll ask again."
"I should not be subjected to this," Zara said with an accusing look at Siain. "But I will re-swear all of the oaths, if that's what it needs to satisfy you. And I will demand an apology from you both afterward."
She hardly sounded like a woman shielded, and asked such a question. Almost contemptuously she reached for the slim, foot-long rod. It shone in the dim light of the lantern.
"You'll swear to obey the two of us absolutely," Pevara told her, and that hand snatched back as if from a coiled viper. Pevara went right on, even sliding the rod closer to the woman with two fingers. "That way we can tell you to answer truthfully and know you will. And if you give the wrong answer, we can know you'll be obedient and helpful in helping us hunt down your Black Sisters. The rod can be used to free you of the oath, if you give the right answer."
"To free?" Zara exclaimed. "I've never heard of anyone being loosed from an oath on the oath rod."
"That is why we are taking all these precautions," Siain told her. "Logically, a Black Sister must be able to lie, which means she must have freed of at least that oath and likely all three. Pevara and I tested and found the procedure much the same as taking an oath." She did not mention how painful it had been, though, leaving the pair of them weeping. She also did not mention that Zara would not be freed of her oath, whatever her answer, not until the search for the Black Aja came to a conclusion. For one thing, she could not be allowed to run off and complain about this questioning, which she most certainly would with every right, if she was not of the Black. If.
Light but Siain wished they had found a sister from another Aja who fit the criteria they had set. A green or a yellow would have done quite nicely. That lot were overweening at the best of times, and of late. No, she was not going to fall prey to the sickness spreading through the tower. Yet she could not help the names that flashed through her head. A dozen greens, twice as many yellows, and every one long past due, taking down a few rungs. Sniff at a sitter?
"You freed yourselves from one of the oaths?" Zara sounded startled, disgusted, uneasy, all at the same time, perfectly reasonable responses.
"And took it again," Pevara muttered impatiently.
Snatching up the slim rod, she channeled a little spirit into one end while maintaining Zara's shield.
"Under the light I vow to speak no word that is not true. Under the light I vow to make no weapon for one man to kill another. Under the light I vow not to use the one power as a weapon except against Shadow Spawn, or in the last defense of my life, the life of my warder, or that of another sister."
She did not grimace over the part about warders. New sisters bound for the Red often did.
"I am not a dark friend. I hope that satisfies you."
She showed Zara her teeth, but whether in smile or snarl was hard to say.
Siain retook the oaths in turn, each producing a slight momentary pressure everywhere from her scalp to the soles of her feet. In truth, the pressure was difficult to detect at all, with her skin still feeling too tight from retaking the oath against speaking a lie. Claiming that Pevara had a beard, or that the streets of Tarvalin were paved with cheese, had been strangely exhilarating for a time. Even Pevara had giggled, but hardly worth the discomfort now. Testing had not really seemed necessary to her. Logically, it must be so. Saying that she was not of the black twisted her tongue, a vile thing to be forced to deny, but she handed Zara the oath rod with a decisive nod. Shifting on her bench, the slender woman turned the smooth white rod in her fingers, swallowing convulsively. The pale lantern light made her appear ill. She looked from one of them to the other, wide-eyed, then her hands tightened on the rod and she nodded. "Exactly as I said," Pevara growled, channeling spirit to the rod again. "Or you'll be swearing until you have it right."
"I vow to obey the two of you absolutely," Zara said in a tight voice, then shuddered as the oath took hold. It was always tighter at the first. "Ask me about the Black Aja," she demanded. Her hands shook, holding the rod. "Ask me about the Black Aja!"
Her intensity told Siain the answer even before Pevara released the flow of spirit and asked the question, commanding utter truth.
"No!" Zara practically shouted. "No, I am not Black Aja! Now take this oath from me! Free me!"
Siain slumped dejectedly, resting her elbows on the table. She certainly had not wanted Zara to answer yes, but she had been sure they had found the other woman out in a lie. One lie found, or so it had seemed, after weeks of searching. How many more weeks of searching lay ahead? And of looking over her shoulder from waking to sleeping, when she managed to sleep. Pevara stabbed an accusing finger at the woman. "You told people that you came from the north." Zara's eyes went wide again.
"I did," she said slowly. "I rode down the bank of the Aranin to Jualda. Now free me of this oath."
She licked her lips. Siain frowned at her. "Golden thorn seeds and a red cocklebur were found on your saddlecloth, Zara." "Golden thorn and red cocklebur can't be found for 100 miles south of Tarvalin." Zara leaped to her feet, and Pevara snapped, "Sit down!" The woman dropped onto the bench with a loud smack, but she did not even wince. She was trembling, no, shaking. Her mouth was clamped shut, otherwise Siain was sure her teeth would have been chattering. Light, the question of north or south, frightened her more than an accusation of being a dark friend.
"From where did you start out?" Siain asked slowly. "And why—"
She meant to ask why the woman had gone roundabout, which plainly she had, just to hide which direction she came from, but answers burst from Zara's mouth.
"From Saladar!" she squealed.
There was no other word for it. Still clutching the oath rod, she writhed on her bench. Tears spilled from her eyes, eyes as wide as they would go and fixed on Pevara. Words poured out, though her teeth truly did chatter now.
"I came to make sure all the sisters here know about the Reds and Loghain, so they'll depose Elida and the tower can be whole again."
With a wail, she collapsed into open-mouthed bawling as she stared at the Red Sitter.
"Well," Pevara said.
Then again, more grimly,
"Well."
Her face was all composure, but the glitter in her dark eyes was far from the mischief Siain remembered as novice and accepted. "So you are the source of that rumor. You are going to stand before the hall and reveal it for the lie it is. Admit the lie, girl." If Zara's eyes had been wide before, they bulged now. The rod dropped from her hands to roll across the tabletop, and she clutched her throat. A choking sound came from her suddenly gaping mouth. Pevara stared at her in shock, but suddenly Siain understood.
"Light's mercy," she breathed. "You do not have to lie, Zara."
Zara's legs thrashed beneath the table as if she were trying to rise and could not get her feet under her.
"Tell her, Pevara. She believes it's true. You've commanded her to speak the truth and to lie. Don't look at me that way. She believes."
A bluish tinge appeared on Zara's lips. Her eyelids fluttered. Siain gathered calm with both hands. "Pivari, you gave the order, so apparently you must release her, or she will suffocate right in front of us."
"She's a rebel." Pivara's mutter invested that word with all the scorn it could hold. But then she sighed. She hasn't been tried yet.
"You don't have to lie, girl."
Zara toppled forward and lay with her cheek pressed against the tabletop, gulping air between whimpers. Siain shook her head in wonder. They had not considered the possibility of conflicting oaths. What if the Black Aja did not merely remove the oath against lying, but replaced it with one of their own? What if they replaced all three with their own oaths? She and Pivara would need to go very carefully if they did find a black sister, or they might have her fall dead before they all knew what the conflict was. Perhaps first a renunciation of all oaths, no way to go about it more carefully without knowing what black sisters swore, followed by retaking the three? Light. The pain of being loosed from everything at once would be little short of being put to the question. Maybe not short of it at all. But certainly a dark friend deserved that and more. If they ever found one. Pivara glared down at the gasping woman without the slightest touch of pity on her face.
"When she stands trial for rebellion, I intend to sit on her court."
"When she is tried, Pivara," Siain said thoughtfully. "A pity to lose the assistance of one we know isn't a dark friend. And since she is a rebel, we need not be overly concerned about using her." There had been a number of discussions, none to a conclusion, about the second reason for leaving the new oath in place. A sister sworn to obey could be compelled. Siain shifted uneasily. That sounded entirely too close to the forbidden vileness of compulsion. She could be induced to help in the hunt, so long as you did not mind forcing her to accept the danger, whether she wished to or not. "I cannot think they would send only one," she went on. "Zara, how many of you came to spread this tale?"
10,
the woman mumbled against the tabletop, then jerked erect, glaring in defiance. "I will not betray my sisters. I won't—" Abruptly, she cut off, lips twisting bitterly as she realized she had done just that.
"Names," Pivara barked. "Give me their names, or I will have your hide here and now."
Names spilled from Zara's unwilling lips. At the command, certainly, more than the threat. Looking at Pivara's grim face, though, Siain was sure she needed little provocation to stripe Zara like a novice caught stealing. Strangely, she herself did not feel the same animosity. Revulsion, yes, but clearly not as strong. The woman was a rebel who had helped break the White Tower when a sister must accept anything to keep the tower whole, and yet... very strange. "You agree, Pivara?" she said when the list concluded. The stubborn woman gave her only a fierce nod for agreement. "Very well. Zara, you will bring Bernila to my rooms this afternoon." There were two from each Aja, excepting the blue and the red, it seemed, but best to begin with the other white. "You will say only that I wish to speak to her on a private matter. You will give her no warning by word, deed, or omission. Then you will stand quietly and let Pivara and me do what is necessary. You are being recruited into a worthier cause than your misguided rebellion, Zara." Of course it was misguided, no matter how mad with power Elida had become. "You are going to help us hunt down the Black Aja." Zara's head jerked unwilling nods at each injunction, her face pained. But at mention of a hunt for the Black Aja, she gasped. Lights! Her wits must have been totally unhinged by her experiences not to see that.
"And you will stop spreading these stories," Pivara put in sternly. "From this moment you'll not mention the Red Aja and false dragons together. Am I understood?"
Zara's face donned a mask of sullen stubbornness. Zara's mouth said, "I understand, sitter." She looked ready to begin weeping again from sheer frustration.
"Then get out of my sight," Pivara told her, releasing the shield and Sidar together. "And compose yourself. Wash your face and straighten your hair."
That last was directed at the back of the woman already darting from the table. Zara had to pull her hands away from her hair to open the door. As the door squeaked shut behind her, Pivara snorted.
I wouldn't put it past her to have gone to this Bernila like a sloven, hoping to warn her that way.
A valid point, Ciane admitted. But who will we warn if we scowl right and left at these women? At the very least, we will attract notice.
The way matters are, Ciane, we wouldn't attract notice kicking them across the tower grounds.
Pivara sounded as if that were an attractive notion.
They are rebels, and I intend to hold them so hard they squeak if one of them so much as has a wrong thought.
They went round and round about that.
Ciane insisted that care in the orders they gave, leaving no loopholes, would be sufficient. Pivara pointed out that they were letting 10 rebels, 10, walk the tower's halls unpunished. Ciane said they would face punishment eventually, and Pivara growled that eventually was not soon enough. Ciane had always admired the other woman's strength of will, but really, sometimes it was pure stubbornness. A faint creak from a hinge was all the warning Ciane had to snatch the oath rod into her lap, hiding it in folds of her skirt as the door opened wide. She and Pivara embraced the source almost as one. Saren walked into the room calmly holding a lantern, and stood aside for Talin, who was followed by tiny Yukiri with a second light, and boyishly slim Dosine, tall for a Kyrianin, who closed the door quite firmly and settled her back against it as if to keep anyone from leaving. 4 sitters representing all the remaining Ajahs in the tower. They seemed to ignore the fact that Ciane and Pivara held Sidar. Suddenly, to Ciane, the room felt rather crowded. Imagination, and irrational, but...
"Strange to see the pair of you together," Saren said.
Her face might be serene, but she slid fingers along the hilt of that curved knife behind her belt. She'd held her chair 40 years, longer than anyone else in the hall, and everyone had learned to be careful of her temper.
"We might say the same of you," Pivara replied dryly.
Saren's temper never upset her.
Or did you come down here to help Dosine try to get some of her own back?
A sudden flush made the yellow's face look even more that of a pretty boy, despite her elegant bearing, and told Ciane which sitter had strayed too near the red quarters with unfortunate results.
I wouldn't have thought that would bring you together, though. Greens at yellow's throats, browns at gray's. Or did you just bring them down for a quiet duel, Saren?
Frantically, Ciane cast around for what reason would have these 4 this deep into the bedrock of Tarvalen. What could tie them together? Their Ajahs, all of the Ajahs, truly were at one another's throats. All 4 had been handed penances by Elida. No sitter could enjoy labor, especially when everyone knew exactly why she was scrubbing floors or pots, yet that was hardly a bond. What else? None were nobly born. Saren and Yukiri were the daughters of innkeepers, Talin of farmers, while Dosine's father had been a cutler.